Hi everyone, welcome to this reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette. This is the Thursday, September 29th edition, as brought to you here on the morning of Friday, September 30th. Hope you're having a great day to your Friday, end of the work week for so many of us. And if you're retired, well, it's just the end of a normal week. Hope you've got a great weekend planned ahead. Before we check on those headlines, which include some news about Hurricane Ian, we will take a check of the forecast here on this reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette, looking at the weekend ahead. For today, you can expect partly sunny and breezy conditions. Those winds out of the south and southeast gusting to as high as 20 miles per hour. The high very temperate, 72 degrees for today. Again, partly sunny and breezy conditions. For tonight, expect a low of 47 degrees. For tomorrow, your Saturday, expect mostly sunny and pleasant conditions. Winds more mild out of the southeast, up to 14 miles per hour. 1 degree warmer at 73 degrees. For tomorrow night, chilly, low 38 degrees. And for Sunday, expect partly sunny and pleasant conditions. Those winds out of the east and southeast, up to 12 miles per hour, a high 71 degrees. And Saturday, mostly sunny and pleasant as well. Looking much the same on Monday, high 73 and sunshine and pleasant conditions. That's your forecast, but again for today, expect a high of 72 degrees, partly sunny and breezy conditions in the Mason City, North Iowa area. As we take a look at these headlines, the first off, Ian pummels Florida. The hurricane makes landfall as a Category 4 storm. That's written by Kurt Anderson of the Associated Press. Other headlines include Biden seeks out late U.S. rep. White House, late Congresswoman, top of mind in flub. More on that story. And then the Northern Iowa Area Community College bond sale opens door for jobs. That written by Abby Koch. But first off, Ian pummels Florida. From St. Petersburg, Hurricane Ian made landfall Wednesday in southwest Florida as one of the most powerful storms ever recorded in the U.S., swamping city streets with water and smashing trees along the coast. The massive storm was expected to trigger flooding across a wide area of Florida as it crawls northeastward, and at least one sheriff's office along with the coast reported that it was already getting a significant number of calls from people trapped in their homes. The hurricane's center struck near Cayo Costa, a protected barrier island just west of heavily populated Fort Myers. Mark Pritchett stepped outside of his home in Venice around the time the hurricane came ashore about 35 miles to the south. He called it terrifying. And the photos here show, before I go on to the story, one taken by Carlene Jean of the South Florida Sun Sentinel, comes via the AP. A resident looks through her broken window Wednesday as a man boards up another broken window at Kings Point 55 Plus community in Delray Beach, Florida. And that's a photo. He's up there on the ladder nailing up the boards to that window there. And she's looking out of the window. The other photo is actually, it's a graph rather, or I guess a map, shows Hurricane Ian's estimated path to travel through southwestern Florida, through the center of the state, towards the Atlantic, pick up and then head Friday, Friday's over the ocean mainly, with some towards the Florida-Georgia line. Saturday, though, striking land once again headed through South Carolina, and then Sunday, the storm should be over western North Carolina and head into Virginia and West Virginia and Kentucky. So we'll see what happens there. Mark Pritchett said, as the story goes on here, "I literally couldn't stand it against the wind." He wrote in a text message, "Rain shooting like needles. My street is a river, limbs and trees down, and the worst is yet to come." Before making its way through the Gulf of Mexico to Florida, Hurricane Ian tore into western Cuba as a major hurricane Tuesday, killing two people and bringing down the country's electrical grid. Cuban officials said they restored some power Wednesday. The Category 4 storm slammed the U.S. coast with 150-mile-per-hour winds and pushed a wall of storm surge accumulated during its slow march over the Gulf of Mexico. About 2.5 million people were ordered to evacuate southwest Florida before the storm hit, but by law, no one could be forced to flee. Though expected to weaken as it marched inland, Ian's hurricane-force winds were likely to be felt well into central Florida. "This is going to be a nasty, nasty 2 days," Florida Governor Ron DeSantis said. stressing that people in Ian's path along the coast should rush to the safest possible shelter and stay there. Jackson Boone left his home near the coast and hunkered down at his law office in Venice with employees and their pets. We're seeing tree damage, horizontal rain, very high wind. I think it's 100 plus sustained outside right now, Boone said by telephone. We have a 50 plus year old oak tree that has toppled over. In Naples, the first floor of a fire station was inundated with about 3 feet of water, and firefighters worked to salvage gear from a fire truck stuck outside the garage in even deeper water, a video posted by the Naples Fire Department showed. Naples is in Collier County, where the Sheriff's Department reported on Facebook that it was getting a significant number of calls of people trapped by water in their homes, and that it would prioritize reaching people reporting life-threatening medical emergencies in deep water. Ian's wind speed at landfall tied it for the fifth strongest hurricane to strike the U.S., along with several other storms. Among them was Hurricane Charley, which hit the almost same spot on Florida's coast in August 2004, killing 10 people and inflicting $14 billion in damage. The governor said the state has 30,000 linemen, urban search and rescue teams, and 7,000 National Guard troops from Florida and elsewhere ready to help once the weather clears. Florida residents rushed ahead of the impact to board up air homes, stash precious belongings on upper floors, and join long lines of cars leaving the shore. Ian made landfall more than 100 miles south of Tampa and St. Petersburg, sparing the densely populated Tampa Bay area from its first direct hit by a massive major hurricane, since 1921. Officials warned residents that Tampa could still experience powerful winds and up to 20 inches of rain. Please, please, please be aware that we are not out of danger yet, Tampa Mayor Jane Castor said in a video on Twitter. Flooding is still going to occur. Flash floods were possible across all of Florida. Hazards include the polluted leftovers of Florida's phosphate fertilizer mining industry, more than 1 billion tons of slightly radioactive waste contained in enormous ponds that could overflow in heavy rains. Isolated tornadoes spun off a storm well ahead of landfall. One tornado damaged small planes and a hangar at the North Perry Airport west of Hollywood along the Atlantic coast. More than 1 million homes and businesses were without electricity, and Florida Power and Light warned those in Ian's path to brace for days without power. The federal government sent 300 ambulances with medical teams and was ready to truck in 3.7 million meals and 3.5 million liters of water once the storm passes. We'll be there to help you clean up and rebuild to help Florida get moving again, Joe Biden said Wednesday, and we'll be there every step of the way. That's my absolute commitment to the people of the state of Florida. Parts of Georgia and South Carolina also could see flooding, rains, and some coastal surge into Saturday. Governor Brian Kemp of Georgia preemptively declared an emergency, ordering 500 National Guard troops on to standby. All right, that's a nasty storm down there. Prayers for all of those folks. Another story, Biden seeks out late U.S. rep. White House says late Congresswoman top of mind in flub. This is an AP story, Dateline Washington, here on the front page of the Mason City Globe Gazette. Joe Biden sought out deceased Representative Jackie Walorski on Wednesday during remarks at a hunger conference saying, "Where's Jackie?" The White House press secretary later said the congresswoman had been top of mind for the president at the time. Karine Jean-Pierre did not acknowledge that Biden had misspoken during his remarks at the White House conference on hunger, nutrition, and health when he looked around the room for Walorski, the Indiana congresswoman who died in an August car crash. Biden, in his remarks, praised bipartisan lawmakers who worked on addressing childhood hunger, including Representative Jim McGovern, Senator Mike Braun, Senator Cory Booker, and Walorski, who was seen as a leader on the issue before her death. "Representative Jackie, are you here? Where's Jackie? I think she wasn't going to be here to help make this a reality," Biden said. Jean-Pierre faced repeated questioning during Wednesday's White House press briefing about Biden's flub, saying more than a dozen times that Walorski was top of mind for Biden, who plans to meet with the Congresswoman's family at an event Friday, that'd be today, when he signs a bill renaming a Veterans Affairs clinic in Indiana after her. She declined to say Biden had erred, nor did she issue an apology to the late lawmaker's family. My answer is certainly not going to change, she told reporters. All of you may have views on how I'm answering it, but I'm answering the question to the way that he saw it and to the way that we see it. All right, moving on, thankfully. NIAACC bond sale opens door for jobs. $6.75 million to be used to create 511 jobs through training program. This story written by Abby Koch, locally here of the Globe Gazette. A new job training agreement is good news for economic development in North Iowa. The North Iowa Area Community College Board of Directors approved final agreements Tuesday with seven North Iowa businesses to create 511 jobs using $6.75 million in bonds through the Iowa Industrial New Jobs Training Program. It is the biggest bond sale ever for this program by the college. It really is just a dedication to their employees and what they feel is important in putting training as an important piece of employment and retention, said Dean of Continuing Education Patty Hansen. All that is just the perfect mix, and it allows people to access the training at really no cost. The seven North Iowa businesses that reached final agreements are Pure Prairie Farms in Charles City. It will create 224 positions and have a net training fund of $2,337,507.31. Stellar Industries, Inc. in Garner will create 119 positions and have a net training fund of $821,304.62. Up Tower, Inc. in St. Ansgar will create 92 positions and have a net training fund of $851,047.34. Centro, Inc., C-E-N-T-R-O is how that's spelled, Centro, Inc., from Hampton, will create 40 positions and have a net training fund of $285,935.68. RAR Bushel Boy LLC, or RAR spelled R-A-H-R, Bushel Boy LLC, that's in Mason City, will create 16 positions and have a net training fund of $80,440.54. PlazTech in Garner will create 10 positions and have a net training fund of $79,764.56. Valent Biosciences is the last one here. In Osage, will create 10 positions and have a net training fund of $106,803.40. It's just a positive sign for the economy. The challenge will be finding the workforce, but when businesses are growing, that's good for everybody, said President Stephen Schultz. The Iowa Industrial New Jobs Training Program, also known as 260E, assists businesses creating new positions with new employee training. According to the Iowa Economic Development website, Hansen said businesses have to meet requirements and be in specific sectors to be part of the program. When they start to talk about growth, we work with them to establish their base employment level. Any positions that they add above that qualify for this training fund are created by taking out bonds, said Hansen. Hansen said the 511 positions created by the NIAC, or Northern Iowa Area Community College's service area, include a variety of job types from human resources to manufacturing. NIACC, do y'all call that NIAC? I'm just going to call it NIAC, as we call ours DMAC, Des Moines Area Community College. NIAC takes the job training straight to the business and provides the resources businesses need. Participants may be eligible for reimbursement up to 50% of the approved award amount for on-the-job training, according to Iowa Economic Development. That's money that they can take for the lower productivity of people as they learn to do the new job, and then the other half is typically the structured training, said Hansen. Workers already have been hired and are being trained for many of the 511 jobs being created. They've already been hiring once we establish that base employment level. with a preliminary agreement. They can start hiring from then, and the final agreement just solidifies the project with them, said Hansen. NIAC sold $6.75 million in bonds Monday to Northland Securities, Inc., which will finance the program, according to Hansen. It is NIAC's biggest agreement under the program, with the next highest total at $3.4 million. According to the Iowa Economic Development, or Iowa Economic Development, the award amount is paid back in bonds retired by the business diverting 1.5% or 3%, depending on wage thresholds, of gross payroll from the Iowa state withholding taxes generated by the new positions. They can train all these new people at no cost, essentially, Hansen said. The amount for this agreement was going to be lower, but the figures and timeline shifted because there were more positions than originally expected, Hansen said. We want to accommodate that. That's what continuing education, our department, is part of. We're here to help the businesses, said Hansen. And that takes care of page A1, takes care of all the news on the front page. Moving on now to page A2, the in brief section, man accused of attempted murder enters not guilty plea. A Mason City man entered a plea at his arraignment for attempted murder on Tuesday. Casey John Larson, age 31, pleaded not guilty to charges of felony attempted murder, which is punishable by up to 25 years in prison. He is accused of shooting a woman in the stomach with a hunting arrow. Around 10 p.m. Friday, September 2nd, the Mason City Police Department responded to a call of people yelling near the intersection of First Street Northwest and North Washington Avenue, according to a press release. At approximately the same time, a call went out to report that a woman near that same area had been shot with an arrow and taken to the hospital. When officers arrived at the scene, they found a bystander who had restrained Larson. According to court documents, Larson also chased the woman with a knife and admitted to officers that he had intended to kill her. Larson was arrested at the scene and continues to be held at the Cerro Gordo County Jail on $100,000 cash-only bail. A jury trial is scheduled for 1:30 p.m. Tuesday, December 13th. In other news, Mason City man gets 5 years for fatal 2021 car crash. A Mason City man has been sentenced for his role in a 2021 car crash that left a local cyclist dead. Cody William Sky, age 29, was sentenced to up to 5 years in prison on Monday after pleading guilty this summer to felony serious injury by vehicle while intoxicated, stemming from a crash in rural Cerro Gordo County in which James Alton Powell, age 62, of Plymouth, was killed. According to court documents, shortly before midnight on June 5th, 2021, Sky was operating his 2010 Dodge Ram under the influence of alcohol when he struck Powell from behind. Powell's bicycle was equipped with proper lighting for nighttime travel. Sky was initially arrested for operating while intoxicated, second offense, making a false report to law enforcement, no insurance, and operating a motor vehicle too closely to a bicycle. Powell died of his injuries on June 11th. 2021, and Sky's OWI charges were amended to homicide by vehicle. Alongside the prison term, Sky was also ordered to pay a fine of $1,025. Mason City man pleads guilty to robbery. A Mason City man pleaded guilty to second-degree robbery in the Cerro Gordo District Court on Tuesday. According to court documents, 39-year-old Pierre Racky Dunson is facing up to 10 years in prison, less than the 25 years he faced after being charged with first-degree robbery in August. The charge stemmed from an incident that occurred at the Yesway convenience store located at 1303 4th Street Northwest in Mason City around 5 p.m. on August 8th. The court affidavit states that Dunson approached the store clerk from the rear and grabbed the worker by the throat and strangled them. Dunson demanded the clerk open the register and give him the money inside. Dunson then threatened to kill the clerk if the crime was reported and exited the store with more than $300. All that for $300. He was apprehended by Mason City Police later that evening at an undisclosed location and manner. Dunson originally pleaded not guilty on August 23rd. He is being held on $25,000 bond at the Cerro Gordo County Jail. A sentencing hearing has been set for November the 8th. Dunson is not eligible for probation and must be sentenced to between 50% and 70% of the maximum sentence because the crime is a forcible felony. New report, oil spills from tankers and pipelines way down. As we continue here on page A2 of the Mason City Globe-Gazette. That's written by Janet McConaughey of the Associated Press, Dateline, New Orleans, Louisiana, where oil and natural gas spills from tankers and pipelines in U.S. waters dropped dramatically from the last decade of the 1990s to the one from 2010 through 2019, the teens, according to a federal report Wednesday. The amount spilled and dumped in wastewater from drilling rigs and production platforms rose, but if the disastrous 2010 Gulf of Mexico spill isn't counted, the increase is mainly because there is more work offshore, said the National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine. It is evident that regulatory changes, advances in science and technology, and, for the most part, attention to safety, would have helped to make North American waters less polluted with oil without the Deepwater Horizon spill, the report said. But the BP well blew, killing 11 people and spewing millions of gallons of oil into the Gulf of Mexico off Louisiana over months. Another big contributor during the past decade was the nation's longest-running oil spill, also off Louisiana. The 497-page report was written by an international committee of academic and industry experts and reviewed by many others. Overall, I think they have done a very comprehensive job, that says Anthony Knapp, or Knapp, K-N-A-P, director of the Geochemical and Environmental Research Group at Texas A&M University, who was not an author or a reviewer. Like a report released in 2003, this one, Oil in the Sea, number 4, Roman numeral 4, Inputs, Fates, and Effects, Inputs, Fates, and Effects, said oil and runoff, largely from cars and cities, is the biggest source of ocean oil pollution, with natural seeps second and spills in third place. But hard data on oil in rivers is so scarce and the range of possible amounts so huge that although the report put the figure from the U.S. about 20 times the earlier estimate, it couldn't say whether there was an actual increase. Increases in urban land area, population, and vehicle ownership make an increase plausible, but it is unclear by how much, the report said. One of the big findings is, in general, we do not have adequate data. Report Committee Chair Kiersey K. Tika of Ardmore Shipping and Pacific Basin Shipping said in a phone interview Tuesday from London. Moving on to page A3 of the Mason City Globe-Gazette, North Iowa Area Escapades. Here are just a few of the events and shenanigans and going on worth checking out this week in the North Iowa area. Now, we're reading the Thursday edition here. It had some events listed for Thursday. But since this is airing Friday morning, we're not going to be bringing those to you. We'll start off with Friday, September 30th. That's today. National Roller Skating Night at Roller City in Mason City. Roller City in Mason City is where you can celebrate National Roller Skating Day. Discounted skating at $5 per person and pizza, a $15 a pizza for dine-in, plus games and a giveaway. This event lasts from 5 to 9 p.m. tonight. Matt Hanna at Bricks Wine and Whiskey in Mason City. Join Bricks Wine and Whiskey as they welcome Michigan native Matt Hanna on Friday, September 30th at 8 p.m. Now based in Minneapolis, Matt is a folk Americana singer-songwriter. His newest album, House of Illusion, charted on National College Radio. Come out to hear him blend his love of Americana songwriters with a passion for the riff-based intensity of 90s rock. Free admission. And lastly, Jeff Reinerts at Tap D in Clear Lake. Jeff was one of the first to play at Tap D, and they are excited to have him back. This 30-year music veteran has all your good time country and classic rock down. You'll hear all the Johnny Cash and Tom Petty to go along with the Bread and Pearl Jam. If you ask nicely, he might play us some of his originals. Jeff takes the stage at 9 p.m. Saturday, October 1st, Mason City Farmers Market at Central Park. The Mason City Farmers Market can now be found in Central Park every Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to noon. The market offers a centralized SNAP or SNAP machine that would be swiped to shop with NIFM tokens and then double your food budget with Double Up Food Bucks up to $10. If you need large quantities of some items, they can be ordered ahead from your favorite vendor. Clear Lake Farmers Market at the Surf Ballroom parking lot. You can enjoy the healthy, fresh produce and handcrafted products offered at the Farmers Market. Starts at 9 a.m. and ends at noon. The Farmers Market will run until October 15th. This is tomorrow, Saturday, October 1st. You can go to the Clear Lake Farmers Market at the Surf Ballroom parking lot. From there we go to Scott Wilcox at Fat Hill Brewing in Mason City. Plays everything singer-songwriter Scott Wilcox made the jump from special ed teacher to professional musician after sending a song to Oprah Winfrey. She liked it so much she had him sing it live on her show. After that, Scott says everything changed. He now does about 250 shows a year, has recorded 4 albums, won the Bob Dylan Songwriting Award twice, had a song inducted into the Packers Hall of Fame, was a semi-finalist for X Factor, and 2 years ago sang with Seal in a Super Bowl 50 commercial. Expect some of Scott's originals and covers of songs you forgot you loved during the show, 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. No admission fee is required. Then we have the Harvest Festival in downtown Clear Lake. Mark your calendar for Clear Lake's popular fall event, Harvest Festival, where you can stroll down Main Avenue and enjoy wine and beer samples, shopping, vendors, and a huge outdoor farmers market at Harvest Festival. Don't forget about the homemade salsa contest, grape stomping competition, food trucks, live music, hay rides, and more. Harvest Festival will be from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. For a full listing of all the activities, go to clearlakeiowa.com. And then one more event for Saturday, the Nightmare Haunted Hike at the Legacy Ranch in Clear Lake. Conveniently located off Interstate 35 in Clear Lake, the Nightmare Haunted attraction has been handing out terrorizing fun for all ages for 15 years. Open every Friday and Saturday and Halloween night from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. Costs are $15 per person. From there we go to Sunday. One event listed for Sunday, the Fall Walleye Classic at Lynn Lorenzen Park in Ventura. The 2022 Fall Walleye Classic Tournament is back on Sunday, October the 2nd. Tournament hours are from 7:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. with an early start possible if all are ready to go. 5 fish max with a 14-inch minimum, only one over 22 inches. Clear Lake Fishing Club will be taking entries the morning of the tournament. Please contact the Clear Lake Fishing Club is planning to sign up the morning of. Move up to Tuesday, October the 4th. Oh, actually, no, one more for Sunday. I missed it here. Clear Lake Fire Department Pancake Breakfast, Sunday, October 2nd. You can kick off the National Fire Prevention Week at the Clear Lake Fire Department's Pancake Breakfast. Our special recipe pancakes, link sausages, coffee, juice, and milk will be served from 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the fire station. It shows a picture of some very yummy pancakes in a stack, along with a front shot of the Fire Department at Clear Lake. Now moving on to Tuesday, October 4th, where it's a down and dirty volunteer session at Central Gardens of North Iowa in Clear Lake. If gardening is your passion and you like to play in the dirt, join the Central Gardens of North Iowa every Tuesday at 6 p.m. and Wednesday at 8 a.m. through October 23rd. As part of the down and dirty crew, you will be doing routine garden chores with guidance from someone on the design team. Children are welcome to come volunteer with adults as well, weather permitting. And then we go to Imagination Exploration at Clear Lake Arts Center, where students of all ages are welcome to attend Imagination Exploration every Tuesday, August 16th through December 27th from 6 to 7 p.m. Join us at the Clear Lake Arts Center to explore the arts from different angles. Participants will be encouraged to create in a guided open studio format. The material cost is $5 per student. Payment will be accepted upon arrival each week. Scholarships are available. And then we go to Clay Class, Learn to Throw at McNider Art Museum in Mason City. Also on Tuesday, October 4th, McNider Art Museum will be hosting clay class, learning to throw every Tuesday between September 13th and November 1st. Class begins at 9:30 a.m. Learn how to center on the potter's wheel and make a variety of pottery forms. Ages 16 plus, all skill levels welcome. Class fee starts at $75. Clay and tools are an additional charge. Secure your spot before they're gone. And it shows here in the photo, next to this listing, the Charles H. McNider Art Museum. In the fall trees around there, the trees are in fall colors in that photo, so it looks like a photo is probably a few years older, at least a year old. Moving on now to the obituaries, because we are at the halfway point here in the reading of the Mason City Globe-Gazette, reminding you that you are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. All material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of the blind and print disabled. This is Andrew Haupt, your reader. I am filling in for this episode. If you have any comments on this or any other IRIS program, then please give us a call at the office, 515-243-6833 in Central Iowa, or toll-free across the state, 1-877-404-4747. And now let's take a look at today's obituaries, starting off with just one today. That'd be for Joseph B. Rottinghouse. Joseph B. Rottinghouse of Clear Lake died Tuesday, September 27th. At the Good Shepherd Healthcare Center in Mason City. A funeral mass will be held at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, October 1st at St. Patrick's Catholic Church, located at 1001 9th Avenue South in Clear Lake, Iowa, with Reverend Josh Link officiating. Burial will be in the Clear Lake Cemetery in Clear Lake, Iowa, with military honors conducted by members of the Clear Lake VFW Post 4868. Visitation will be held Friday, September 30th from 5 to 7 p.m. with a rosary service at 7 p.m. at the Ward Van Slyke Colonial Chapel located at 310 First Avenue North in Clear Lake. Memorials may be directed to the Sisters of the Presentation. They are at 2360 Carter Road in Dubuque, 52001. Joseph B. Rottinghouse was born March 20th, 1936, in Doherty, Iowa, the son of Joseph and Catherine, maiden name Gudenkoff Rottinghouse. Joe attended St. Patrick's Catholic School. He served in the United States Army. He was honorably discharged in 1957. Joseph was united in marriage to Dolores Mutter Mann, December 12th, 1986. Joe worked as a fireman for the Charles City Fire Department. He later opened Home Electronics Charles City, eventually expanding to a second location in Mason City. Joe worked most of his time in management in the restaurant industry, including the 1912 House, the Runway, and Perkins, to name a few. In 1999, Joe and Dee opened Daylight Donuts in Clear Lake. Joe retired from the Clear Lake school system after 20 years as a bus driver. He was a member of St. Patrick's Catholic Church of Clear Lake. Work was Joe's hobby. He was a jack of all trades. His greatest enjoyment was spending time with his children and grandchildren attending their activities. Joe is survived by his wife, Dee Rottinghouse, children, Ann, married to John Mayer, Ann Rottinghouse, Tom Rottinghouse, Joe M., married to Sherry Rottinghouse, Chuck, married to Kristen Voss Rottinghouse, grandchildren, Andrew, Alex, JT, Ashley, Sydney, Carmen, and Eric. Nieces Donna Armstrong and Pam Hendricks. Sisters-in-law Teresa Rottinghouse, Dixie Rottinghouse, and Verna Mutterman, along with many other nieces, nephews, relatives, and friends. Joe is preceded in death by his parents, siblings Mary Catherine Clark, Anthony Bud Rottinghouse, Winifred Merfeld, Rafael Rottinghouse, Raymond Rottinghouse Sr., Michael Rottinghouse Sr., Anthony Rottinghouse Sr., Roseanne Rottinghouse, and Jim Rottinghouse. The Ward Van Slyke Colonial Chapel is in charge of arrangements. They can be reached at 641-357-2193. And also just one death notice, that would be for Donald D. Dorenkamp, age 91, of Belmond, died Tuesday, September 27th, 2022, at Rehabilitation Center, Belmond. Arrangements are with the Ewing Funeral Home of Belmond. Moving on now to the world of sports here in the Mason City Globe-Gazette. And the headline Halvorsen on quest to go much faster. The Riverhawk senior eyes state qualifying standard in 100 breaststroke. That's written by Jim Nelson of the Regional Sports Editor. And the photo here, before I go further, shows Mason City senior Taylor Halvorsen swimming the 100 breaststroke on Tuesday in a meet against Marshalltown at John Adams Middle School. There's also another photo here of Mason City's Jenna Braun swimming the 100 back Tuesday at John Adams Middle School in a meet with Marshalltown. Dateline Mason City. For more than 2 months, Mason City girls swimmer Taylor Halvorsen was on the sidelines and out of the pool this summer. That put on a ton of stress because the knee injury was keeping her away from getting better at her best event, the breaststroke, where the Riverhawk senior was a state qualifier in 2021. Eventually, the knee healed enough for Halvorsen to get back to work on that stroke and Tuesday night at the John Adams Middle School pool against Marshalltown. Halvorsen posted a season best in that event. Halvorsen won in 1 minute 11.60 seconds, 2 seconds off her all-time best. But with a month of the season left, she knows she can go faster. "I feel really good," Halvorsen said. "That is actually is the best time I've ever swam in the 100 breast in a regular season meet. So I'm happy with that. It is pretty relieving because I didn't know if I was going to be able to do the breaststroke because of the knee injury. I was a little scared for a while, so it is great to see that I'm back where I was and even a little better than before." The Riverhawks, who beat Marshalltown easily, haven't even begun to taper down for next month's regional and state competitions. That is where Halvorsen will focus on her being the fastest. In the postseason, she has hit 1 minute and 9 seconds in the 100 breaststroke, and she believes she can hit the state qualifying automatic qualifying mark of 1 minute 8.51 seconds. "I've kind of been stuck on 1 minute 9 seconds for the last 2 years, so the plan is to go to 1 minute 8 seconds. Halvorsen's last home meet included a win in the 200 free, where she cut 7 seconds off her PR, and she swam winning legs on the 200 free relay leadoff and 400 relay anchor. Riverhawk head coach Steve Hugo said it was a banner night for his team and a great night to send out Halvorsen and her fellow seniors, Jenna Braun, Mary Fox, Marie Manternack, Rosa Monarch, Bailey Nastrom, and Anila Swegel. "I kind of scouted Marshalltown and figured we could move some girls around to some events they hadn't swam before and have some success," Hugo said. "With its senior night, it was a very spirited meet and a lot of best times were put up to the board on the board. It looks like about 40 season best. It was great. We had some really great races." Mason City posted event wins in the 200 medley relay with Anna Marie Hansen, Lauren Halvorsen, Metternach, and Braun. Monarch in the 1 meter division, Braun in the 100 fly, Aspen Cole in the 100 free, Manternach in the 500 free, and in the 400 free relay, Grace here, Manternach, Cole, and Halvorsen. The Riverhawks return to action Saturday at the Dick Markison Invitational in Cedar Falls. There we talk about the Indians returning to winning formula. Prep volleyball is the subject. Forest City has gone on a 9-2 run since return to a 6-2 offense. That's written by Zach Martin of the Globe Gazette. Dateline Algona. "Tinkering with lineups and figuring out the right rotations has been an ongoing battle for Forest City's volleyball team. It has put out several different lineup combinations on the court. It started out 4-0, then went to the Osage tournament and suffered 5 straight losses and subsequently fell out of the Class 3A rankings. We walked away from Osage with a lot of positives in our play," Indians head coach Lacey Jerome said. "We did enough good, small things. We love going to see what we can do and see really good opponents." As they approached their own home tournament 2 weeks ago, Jerome decided to go back to what worked in 2021 and see if it would translate in 2022. Boy, has it ever. Forest City has gone 9-2 since going back to the 6-2 with Jaden Jerome and Jalen Hovanga as its two setters, while also keeping them as powerful outside hitters to play off each other. It has created stability in the setter role, a spot where those two plus Jenna Walker and Riley Miller are also options. It leads to better players in the serve-receive. First set we did one rotation with setters. Second set we did one rotation with setters, and there was a lot of evenness throughout the day, Coach Jerome said. Just for comfortability's sake, Jaden and Jalen have experience. Well, the Indians didn't walk away from Osage dejected. Even though it was early September, Coach Jerome didn't want to press a panic button to derail their season. That didn't happen. And now Forest City is a week away from avenging last year's Top of Iowa West Championship match versus Lake Mills as the two Winnebago County rivals meet in Forest City for the right to be atop the conference. It triumphed over Bishop Garrigan 25-17, 25-15, and 25-22 on Tuesday at Bishop Garrigan High School to move to 52-5 all-time against TIC West foes since the conference's beginnings in 2015. Have three goals, met them all, and probably played our best, Coach Jerome said, which is a good time to do that. Very proud of them for controlling the game, making them make some choices. Well, Lake Mills was idle on Tuesday and will face North Iowa at home on Thursday. If it were to win on senior night, both the Bulldogs and Indians will be a perfect 7-0 in the conference, and the winner next week is the outright title champ. It was a clean sweep by Lake Mills last year. Just coming out with the mentality we had tonight, Coach Jerome said. Pass well and have many options. Forest City, with a 15-7 record, went to its best players in Hovanga and Jerome to close out the opening set. Hovanga was on an 8-0 service run that put it up 12-5 that forced a Golden Bears timeout. When Bishop Garrigan rallied to be down 19-16, Carly Lambert slammed down a kill and Hovanga fired back-to-back kills on the outside to re-up the advantage to 22-16 and coast to the win. Jalen was serving well and we were hitting well, Coach Jerome said. Multiple hustle plays to keep rallies alive allowed the Indians to score 11 of the final 12 points in the second set. Bethany Warren, Colette Logus, and Jerome each kept the ball in play. On the Logues backwards bump, or running towards the Forest City bench, Warren won the battle at the net for the point that was the momentum swing it needed. Jerome finished with four kills during the 11-1 run. That has been something that's been getting better this season compared to teams past, Coach Jerome said. It is kind of the norm now. Okay, in another local story, Solberg Moss claims Iowa Alliance crown. Mason City freshman Michael Solberg Moss hitting a tee shot during the marked man invite held at Mason City Country Club earlier this season is the headline photo shown in black and white here on page B3 of the Globe Gazette. Solberg Moss won the first ever individual Iowa Alliance Conference title. There were more than the usual amount of firsts for Mason City's Michael Solberg Moss on Tuesday morning. He completed his first conference tournament, which happened to be the first ever Iowa Alliance Conference tournament since the league began this fall. And as a freshman, Solberg Moss gets the honor of being the first individual champion. One of the most consistent golfers this season for the Riverhawks put together an 18-hole round of 77 at American Legion Golf Course in Marshalltown to claim a total score of 15 over par and win the individual crown. The opening 18 holes were played in Fort Dodge nearly a month ago, and the final 18 holes wrapped up on Tuesday. Solberg Moss was third after the first day and fired the second lowest round of day number two. Drew DeGabriel made it to Riverhawks with all-conference honorees as he carded a 79 on Tuesday to finish the 36-hole tournament with a 160 plus 19 to place fifth. He won a tiebreaker over Marshalltown's Kale Sandvik. The Bobcats won the team title with a plus 77, while Ames was second at plus 88, and Mason City came in at third at plus 140. Fort Dodge and Waterloo East finished out The team scores are the plus 151 and plus 163, respectively. And one note here from your reader, Andrew Haub, just wanted to say, if I'm not saying those golf scores right, those team title scores with the plus 140, etc., forgive me, I'm not a golf pro. Not yet, anyway. Need to talk to Bob Wagner some more and figure out how to play that game. Anyway, moving on now to volleyball here in the Mason City Globe-Gazette. Mason City 3, Des Moines Hoover 0. Where the River Hawks won an Iowa Alliance Conference match for the first time in over 20 days as they swept the Huskies 25-6, 25-11, and 25-13 in a cross-divisional match on Tuesday. It was a dominant three sets for Mason City with a 10-12 record, or 10-12 record, as it cruised in each set. It was its first sweep in a regular season match in almost 2 weeks, and the first in a non-tournament contest since September 8th. Then we gone to Garner, Hayfield, Ventura, Hampton, Dumont, Cal. Garner, Hayfield, Ventura with 3, Hampton, Dumont, Cal with 2. 9 different Iowa towns were part of a classic as the Cardinals won a thrilling 24-26, 25-12, 19-25, 25-19, and 15-13 match over the Bulldogs on Tuesday night in a non-conference battle. GHV, with a 10-13 record, coasted in the second set after dropping the opener. HD Cal responded with a win in the third to take a 2-1 lead in the best of five. The Cardinals responded. Anyway, moving on to send the match into a fifth set. After a lot of back and forth, GHV finished the job and claimed their first five-setter of the year. Greta Gouge had 15 kills to lead the Cardinals. Allie Hess had 20 digs. The Bulldogs, with a 3-17 record, had been in three matches that went the full five and have gone 1-2. They have lost 7 in a row since a victory over Iowa Falls Alden 2 weeks ago. Aubrey Showalter and Charlie Morton each recorded double-digit kills, and Aubrey Groenwald dished out 25 assists. Abigail Dreyer led a trifecta of HD Cal back row players in digs with 15, and Showalter nabbed 3 solo blocks. Clear Lake 3, Webster City 2 in their match. The Lions rallied down 2-1 and secured a goal for head coach Heather Johnson in their 24-26, 25-23, 19-25, 25-20, and 15-13 North Central Conference victory over the Lynx on senior night. With over 2 weeks left in the regular season, Clear Lake with a 12-7 overall record and 2-3 in the NCC has surpassed last season's win total and secured the most wins for the program spanning a decade. It was far from easy against Webster City as each took a tightly contested set before the Lynx took control of the third to snare the lead in the match. The Lions pieced together a decisive fourth set win and completed the comeback in fifth. From there we go to Charles City 3, Crestwood 1. The Comets picked up their second Northeast Iowa Conference win of the season as they edged out the Cadets 25-16, 23-25, 25-16, and 25-22 on the road on Tuesday. The first and third sets in which Charles City, with a 13-7 overall record and 2-2 in the Northeast Conference, separated itself were vastly different from the second and fourth. Crestwood squared the match at a set apiece with a second set win, but the Comets got enough of a push to win the fourth and avoid a fifth. Anya Rizika with 19 assists and 10 digs and Morgan Malloy with 13 assists and 13 digs each posted double doubles for Charles City. Keely Collins led the front row with 9 kills, while Maya Rimrod chipped in 8. Rimrod and Ava Ellis joined Malloy with 13 digs. From there we go to Belmont Clemmy, 3 against West Hancock, 0. The Broncos remained in contention for a top 4 finish in the top of Iowa West standings with a 25-10, 25-8, and then 25-13 sweep versus the Eagles on Tuesday night. West Hancock, with a 1-19 overall season and 0-7 in the TIC West, has one more match in the league to avoid its first season without a conference win since 2015, the first year of the Top of Iowa Conference. From there we go to Central Springs. 3, Newman Catholic, 0. The Panthers sophomore setter Zeri McDonough eclipsed, Zeri McDonough, 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 eclipsed 1,000 career assists in their 25-10, 25-8, and 25-16 Top of Iowa East sweep over the Knights on Tuesday night. McDonough had 550 as a freshman and sits at 457 with the postseason drawing closer. She has been a catalyst in Central Springs, 12-8 record with Central Springs overall and 5-2 in the TIC East, guaranteeing itself at worst a third place finish in the standings. 31 dimes were dished out by McDonough on Tuesday in the Panthers' three-set victory in which none of the sets were decided by less than 7 points. Abby Pate led their attack with 10 kills, while Casey Crum and Aubrey Heft registered 8 apiece. Newman dropped 8-14 overall and 3-4 in conference play. From there we go to Osage 3, Rockford 0. The Class 3A number 9 Green Devils clinched at least a share of another Top of Iowa East title with a convincing 25-14, 25-14, and 25-6 sweep over the Warriors on Tuesday night. Osage, with an 18-6 overall record and 7-0 in the TIC East, can win it outright with a victory over Northwood Kensett next week. It will then close the regular season at Mason City's weekend tournament on October 8th and face Charles City 2 days later. The Green Devils faced little resistance all night and hammered the foot down on the third to complete the sweep. None of their stats were published online. Rockford, with an 11-9 overall record and 3-4 in the conference, has lost 4 matches in a row. Its libero, Jayla Schriever, recorded 13 digs while McKinley Hoffman dished out 6 assists and Danica DeBurr nabbed 3 kills. From there we go to St. Ansgar 3 and Northwood Kensett 0. With their full arsenal of hitters back in the fold, the Saints coasted past the Vikings 25-8, 25-12, and 25-19 in a Top of Iowa East tussle on Tuesday night. Addison Tabbert returned and played all 3 sets with a team-high 10 kills, while Cora Heater played for the first time since the season opener and notched 2 kills. St. Ansgar, 13-10 in their overall record and 5-1 in the TIC East, hit a .373 on the night and averaged 12.3 kills per set. Kinsey Anderson led the back row with 12 digs and 4 players recorded, at least 3 aces, paced by Anderson's 5. No stats for Northwood Kensett, with a 2-14 record and 0-7 in the conference, were published online. From there we go to North Butler 3, West Fork 1. Mallory Meyer led West Fork with 7 kills, while Ellie Weaver and Emma Martinek each had 5. Brecken Dickman led the team with 18 digs. And then finally in cross country, Ringo finishes top 20 in stacked invite. Newman Catholic's Joey Ringo was the only runner on its boys and girls team to finish near the front as he paced 17th in a time of 17 minutes, 26.6 seconds on Tuesday at the Jessup Invite. The Knights finished 12th in the boys' field and 15th for the girls. Kenna Hemman crossed the line just outside the top 50 in 22 minutes, 22.7 seconds. Their low five on the girls had a 1 minute 57 spread between Hemman and Haley Heinzelman. Newman's boys squad down to 16th in the latest Class 1A team rankings and still without Ryan Kelly had its numbers 2 through 5 runners finish within a minute of each other to total 357 points. Well, again, that story written by Zach Martin of the Globe Gazette. Time now for some short news before we send it back for the register reading for today. Here in this reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette. Abscam figure sent back to prison in ballot stuffing case. That's written by Mary Claire Dale of the AP Dateline Philadelphia. where a former congressman from Philadelphia who went to prison over the 1970s era Abscam scandal was sent back to prison at age 79 in a ballot stuffing case. Former Democratic U.S. Representative Michael J. Ozzie Myers was sentenced to 2.5 years in prison Tuesday by a judge who questioned whether he had learned any lessons over the years. Myers admitted he had worked with election officials to pad the vote tallies of his political consulting clients. Some were running for city judgeships. Myers would solicit payments from his clients in the form of cash or checks as consulting fees and then use portions of these funds to pay election officials to tamper with election results, U.S. Attorney Jacqueline Romero said in a statement after the hearing. Voting is the cornerstone of our democracy. If even one vote has been illegally cast or if the integrity of just one election official is compromised, it diminishes faith in process, she said. And then we go to one last story here. Katie Couric says she's been treated for breast cancer. This was written by David Bowder of the Associated Press, Dateline, New York, where Katie Couric said Wednesday that she'd been diagnosed with breast cancer and underwent surgery and radiation treatment this summer to treat the tumor. Couric, who memorably was tested for colon cancer on the Today Show in 2000, announced her diagnosis in an essay on her website, saying she hoped it would encourage other women to be tested. Couric, age 65, was diagnosed on the first day of summer and wrote that she had had her final radiation treatment on Tuesday. My left breast does feel like I've been sunbathing topless, but other than that, I've felt fine, she wrote. Couric's first husband, Jay Monahan, died of colon cancer in 1998 at age 41, and her sister Emily was 54 when she died of pancreatic cancer in 2001. Given her family history, Couric wrote, "Why would I be spared?" My reaction went from "Why me?" to "Why not me?" All right, all that news from the Mason City Globe-Gazette for this past almost hour. This has been IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. That's what you're listening to now. This has been Andrew Haupt filling in as your reader for today. Thank you so much for sharing your time with us, and we thank you so much for listening. It's great to be here with you. Great to have you with us. We hope you have a great day, everyone. Have a great weekend and straight ahead.